the Milwaukee Journal sent on Milwaukee Brewers podcast, joining you again, middle of the week this time. The Milwaukee Brewers continuing to kind of have an uneven 2020 season, sort of trading wins and losses at this point, three games under 500 as we record on Wednesday. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. On the other line is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Everything he writes can be found at jsonline.com. Brewers coming off a 12-1 defeat at the hands of the Detroit Tigers on Tuesday. Another game coming up as we record this. You may very well be listening after that game, but kind of the same themes we've been talking about, Tom, all year as far as the offense struggling. It just does not click into gear. They've had a couple games, a couple bright spots, but primarily it's everybody. It's the big guys, you know, the top of the lineup. It's some of the players that were brought in. It seems like it's an across the board issue. So I don't know if there's anything new to say, but I'll just let you try. if there's any diagnosis you can give to what ails this offense, and if it does snap out of it, where you suspect or where Craig Counsell hopes some of that relief is going to come from.
Well, you know, the Brewers keep hoping and saying that this just can't continue, that almost everybody would be unable to get going offensively, yet it has. And we've talked on the podcast before about all the reasons why their offense is scuffling, but we might as well kind of summarize them again. Obviously, Lorenzo Cain opting out of the season one weekend was a big loss, and especially they have not been able to find anybody in the leadoff spot that's given them any production there whatsoever. So that has been an ongoing issue. The two top hitters back from last year, Keston Hira and Christian Yelich, they'll have the occasional, you know, breakthrough game, but then they fall back. Neither one has been able to sustain any type of hot hitting for any period. So that's been hurtful to the offense. Ryan Braun's been banged up, currently has not been playing for the last several games because of a bad back. So he's just been more or less a non-factor, had a big three-run homer last week and basically hasn't played since. All the new guys are scuffling to various degrees. Avisail Garcia has not done what they thought he would do. And I think playing center field in Kane's absence has taken something out of him. You definitely do a lot more running around in center. You know, Smoke's had a couple of decent games, but has overall not gotten going. Sogard had a walk-off home run, but that's been about it. Jerko's done okay. He's on bereavement leave now, but he's done okay. Narvaez massively struggling to get going. Probably the one of all the newcomers, the one who's just been the most lost at the plate on a regular basis. So, you add all that up, and that's an offense that's scuffling. They're bottom three, not in just the National League, in the major leagues, the 30 clubs, bottom three in almost every important category, including the most important, runs. have they had pitching issues from time to time? Yes, they have, including last night in the 12-1 loss. But the ongoing theme has not only been trouble scoring runs, but almost complete dearth of runs in the early innings. And so they're just constantly playing from behind. It's I consider it a minor miracle that they're 16-19 as we do this podcast. It's only because of the pitching and an occasional, you know, big hit that wins some games. But their starting pitching overall has been pretty good. Lindblom's been struggling, but overall been pretty good. And their bullpen's been excellent. Although they did trade a piece on Monday in David Phelps. So, you know, it's there's time to get going. I don't think you're going to have to be much above 500, if at all, to be one of the eight playoff teams. But they got to get going, you know. And it's just so hard when you can't score. Every game is just a battle, life or death, to win the game. And that's a tough way to go through even a 60-game season.
Yeah, and in terms of the offense, because I do want to talk about David Phelps and the move that was made by the Brewers right before the trade deadline a lot here too. Keston Hira is a guy who I think we probably would have expected him to step back a little bit as the league gets more film on him and gets an opportunity, you know, to try and figure him out a little bit after he came out of the gates just blazing through his rookie season. I think Christian Yelich, we've talked about, he's going to, we assume, going to be fine. I mean, he's had two MVP caliber seasons. Keston Hira, I guess we don't know for sure where he goes from here, how he adjusts, and sort of what things will be asked of him going forward. And as he tries to match himself to what the league is offering, has Craig Council talked about Keston Hira's development, specifically what he's seeing and sort of what, you know, what sort of the next step is to try to get him on track a little bit?
We've talked about Hira, you know, as well as just about everybody else on the team. But, I mean, it's, you know, he got team's attention last year by in his first year having a very good 84 games or so offensive showing. So he got their attention. So, you know, as you noted, everybody has film, everybody has scouting, everybody has the analytics material. So I'm sure that they all took a good look at that. You can see one thing they're doing consistently with him that this year that he's struggling with, pitching him high fastballs, he's really struggled with that. He's had a lot more swing and miss this year. He leads the National League in strikeouts. He's always had some swing and miss to his game. He had some last year, but he has way more this year. And so, you know, that. Pitchers are adjusting to him, what they see, and they're going to keep doing something to you, either, you know, stop letting them do it or you do something about it. So he's going to keep seeing high fastballs until he either lays off them or starts hitting them. And so that's what's been going on with him. He's a young hitter. He doesn't have that many at-bats. Didn't have that many at-bats in the minor leagues either. You know, he went from a 2017 draft pick to being – a key part of the team in 2019. So he does not have a deep foundation of at-bats. And so I think that's going to take us a long time to know exactly what Keston Hira is going to be. But he certainly has a lot of offensive potential. And when pitchers make mistakes to him, he still punishes them pretty well. So we'll see what happens to him. But the swing and miss has been an issue. But that's been an issue with the whole team.
Right.
You know, I, after the 12-1 loss Tuesday night in our Zoom session with Craig Council, after another night of getting guys on base and not being able to get them in, and almost always because of strikeouts, I asked Craig, because he had mentioned to us a few weeks back that he was surprised that his team was striking out as much, that he didn't think this bunch was going to be a huge strikeout group. And when I revisited that with him last night, he just bluntly said, well, I was wrong. I said this team strikeouts were not going to be a problem, but it is a problem. I know the thinking on strikeouts has changed both within the game and outside of the game. You know, it's not considered that big a deal to strike out now. But when you consistently do it as a team with runners in scoring position – and less than two outs, and you're not one of the top home run teams in the league. In other words, you're not making up for it by belting a bunch of home runs. Then that's a problem. You know, if you're not going to be a good slugging team, you cannot afford to be also a big swing and miss team. Because if you're not going to hit home runs, you better start getting some hits. And you know, there's a lot of times where just putting a ball in play would get a run home, and they just can't do it. They strike out just way too much, way, way, way too much. They're averaging almost 10 per game, and that's just, you know, that's not going to cut it. Again, not going to cut it if you're not also slugging. You know, if they've had some high strikeout teams in recent years, but they've also been a great slugging team, and then that's made up for it. But now they got no slugging and high strikeouts. That's not a good formula.
David Stern saying, as you guys reported it, that he was hoping to add a bat, that he was close on adding a bat, but it didn't quite work out right before the trade deadline. So the only move the Brewers wound up making was dealing from their strength, dealing David Phelps, one of the offseason acquisitions for that bullpen, and trading him to the Phillies for three young prospects, a couple 19-year-olds and a third guy who just turned 20, I believe, on the day of the trade deadline. I was really fascinated to see how the trade deadline played out this year with so many teams in uncertain situations. I imagine most teams simply can't identify themselves as a buyer or seller with everybody being in it. Like you said, this Brewers team somehow 16-19 and very much capable of making the playoffs based on where they stand. I mean, they have to have a lot go right, but it could totally happen. So I'm sure, like a lot of people, David Stearns was in a tough spot. I was surprised to see them deal Phelps. They've had other guys emerge from the bullpen that I think makes that possible. Did you read this trade as simply just, maybe there's nothing to read into it. You could read into it that they're selling a little bit, or you could read into it that he just found a deal that was good and Devin Williams has emerged as kind of a star in the bullpen and maybe David Phelps is somewhat expendable because of that. How did you read the decision to deal David Phelps?
Well, apparently, according to Stearns, there was so much action on him, which is not surprising. You know, he's having a very good year as a setup guy, and everybody's always looking to strengthen their bullpens for the stretch runs. They had so much action on him, they decided to see what the best possible deal they could get was, and apparently it was this deal with the Phillies. You know, when you trade for kids like that, it takes years to figure out how you did. This reminds me a lot of a trade that Stearns made shortly after becoming general manager after the 2015 season. In his first winter meetings, he traded first baseman Adam Lind for three 19-year-old pitchers, almost exactly this kind of deal. And one of them turned out to be Freddie Peralta. And so you have to say that was very well done. If you get one of the three, another one was a pitcher named Herrera who almost made it to the big leagues. I think he flamed out after Triple A. And then the other pitcher, Masaki, was just kept getting hurt. I think he had Tommy John surgery. He just couldn't stay well. So, but they did get Freddie Peralta, who they signed to a five-year deal in spring training. So they obviously like him. So we'll know. I don't think I'll be around on the beat when we know if they did good in this trade or not, because I think we're talking like 2024. You know? And so, yeah, they felt they were dealing from strength. They didn't think it would blow a huge hole in the team. But the fact remains that, you know, not only did they not help the team, they hurt it a little bit by trading one of their better relievers. So did nothing to help the 2020 team. A lot of other playoff minor teams did the same thing. I'm guessing the prices were exorbitant. And I think, and rightly so, a lot of presidents or GMs of baseball operations were either A, hamstrung by not being able to take on money with all the teams losing so much revenue this year, or struggled with the concept of what do you give up to get a guy when you might make the playoffs anyway with eight teams from each league going in and no real home field advantage to play for. Everybody's going to be kind of on an equal footing. And it's best of three now when you play that first round instead of the wild card crapshoot. So I just think people struggle with the whole concept of what was worth doing.
Right, and not to mention that we don't for 100% know this season's going to, you know, come to fruition at the end. I mean, right now things have looked very good through the halfway mark of the MLB season, but there's no guarantee that we're not going to have some sort of COVID outbreak that sort of tears it at the seams and short circuits the playoffs. I mean, hopefully at this point, hopefully we can anticipate that not happening, but who knows? So
yeah, I just think people struggled with the whole, except for the Padres.
Yeah, they went all in.
They just tried to see if they could make as many trades as possible in the last 24 hours. You know, I look at I think what the Padres are doing is a lot like what Doug Melvin did in 2008 when he went all in on CC Sabathia and traded some of the best prospects in the organization for him. When you've gone a long time without making the playoffs, and the Brewers have gone 26 years, that's a very long time. The Padres have not been since 06. And this general manager, you know, A.J. Preller, totally overhauled the team once with no success whatsoever, and now he's doing it a little bit different way. And they've been so bad for so long that they've collected all kinds of great prospects, too. So, but I just think they decided, and Miami a little bit, too. It's been a while since they've been in, too. I think they just decided they got to get in the playoffs this year and just get the narrative away from, you guys never go to the playoffs. Yeah. And so I think that's why the Padres were super aggressive, and Miami actually added instead of selling off too. So teams, and you know, if you don't make the playoffs this year, with 16 teams going out of the 30, more than half, it's been a massive failure for you over the 60 games if you don't go this year. So, and that's what the Brewers are going to be faced with if they don't go. It's going to be a failure because if they're letting in over half the teams, you better be good enough to get in.
Definitely. Some of the there was some chatter about Josh Hader, which we never really even talked about because the trade deadline was kind of upon us so quickly. I think that would have been a conversation topic that would have gotten a lot more oxygen in other years. And obviously Hader was not traded, but curious where you think, I guess if you think he'll be a trade candidate in the offseason, because this team has, you know, they haven't really been able to reach any sort of long-term agreement with Hader. He's had his contract renewed a couple times, and sort of we've sort of talked about that in the past. It's not an act of protest per se, but it's sort of a sign that the two sides aren't seeing eye to eye on various things. Now, he's got a big-time arbitration set up now where he's going to make a lot of money over the next 3 years as a Super 2 player, particularly at the end of this, the next 3 years. He'll be worth a ton of money. I could see the Brewers feeling like, you know, he's a little bit of a volatile asset in terms of being a relief pitcher. He's been pretty reliable over the past 2+ years at this point, but I could see the Brewers at least listening to offers. And I don't know if you think that's a certainty or, you know, maybe it could happen. I mean, I guess when you hear that there are rumors ever about Josh Hader, how seriously do you take them? Is he somebody that you think the Brewers could move in the future?
Well, I was 100% sure they would not move him Monday. Made no sense whatsoever. And I'll tell you why in a second. But I do think he will be somebody that they will entertain trading in the future, and as early as this offseason, when they can have more time to entertain offers, not have a deadline. But it made no sense to trade him Monday, and here's why. They had less than 30 games to go and a shot to make the playoffs, and really no chance to make it if they traded him. He was one of their best. They've got two elite players, Christian Yelich and Josh Hader. So if you know, they need both of them to try to make the playoffs this year. So why would you trade him Monday instead of keeping him for those last 26 games and then trading him in the offseason if you really think cost control has to be addressed right now? So it made zero, absolutely 0% chance. 0% sense to trade him on Monday. So I never expected that to happen. I would have been flabbergasted if they did, because why do it? There's no upside to doing it Monday, unless some team just got nutty and offered you like their best three prospects in their organization. But no one was going to do that. You know, I don't think anybody, the Padres traded some of their prospects, but I was looking, not many of their top 10, and I don't think any of their first four. So nobody was in a move to trade their best prospects on Monday because of all the things you and I just mentioned. Too volatile, too uncertain, too crazy of a year to be doing stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff you do over the winter when you got a lot of time to think about it, no deadline to worry about, and probably more teams in the bidding too. So I'll pay a lot more attention to Josh Hader trade rumors this winter than I did on Monday.
Devin Williams, I feel like his emergence made the David Phelps deal make more sense to me. Now, you're saying they were just fielding a lot of offers, and they probably didn't quite calculate it this way, but seeing Devin Williams take this incredible leap forward to the point where, I mean, his changeup might be one of the best pitches in baseball this season, and he's striking out guys at a ridiculous rate. He's a guy whose minor league numbers were always fine, but he wasn't a guy who struck out. He struck out about one batter an inning. I mean, he was fine. And then he kind of took a lunge forward last year. Double A and Triple A, his numbers got really good. He came up to the big league team, and numbers were so-so. He didn't have a lot of opportunity, but got his feet wet. And this year just seems to have, you know, figured it all out. We're still talking about a small sample, but it's got to be super encouraging and has to make the Brewers feel like they could deal from their bullpen and still be strong in that area. How for real, I guess, do you think this is? I mean, do you see some adjustments and think this is, you know, this might be a guy who's in the Brewers bullpen for a long time, dominating hitters for a long time?
Well, he certainly has the stuff to do it. You know, he was a second round pick a few years back in a year in which they had no first round pick. Because of signing Kyle Loesch as a free agent. And so he was their top pick that year out of high school in St. Louis. And he struggled and then got hurt, had Tommy John surgery, and had the, a long road back. But they've always liked him. But he's taken big steps forward with, I mean, not many guys can throw 98 with a devastating changeup. So he has two way, way, way above average pitches. And he has closer material written all over him. And if they are going to ever feel, somewhat secure in trading Josh Hader, it'd be because Devin Williams could fill in and be their closer at some point. So he's definitely a rising star. And what he's doing is very almost Josh Hader-like. Well, this year even better than Hader as far as strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, he's struck out more. He's averaging more than two strikeouts an inning. You can only average three.
Right. Yeah, he's been sensational, and Josh Hader's been good for sure. He's had some trouble with control. Maybe the adding more sliders into his repertoire has made the control a little bit more difficult. Had that one sort of disastrous outing where he walked five of six guys. But as you alluded to it earlier, Eric Sogard hit a walk-off home run. That was against the Pirates. So I did think the Brewers might make a minor deal for a catcher. Because Manny Pena, since we've last chatted, on the disabled list with a torn meniscus, he will be out for the remainder of the season. And for an offense that has very few guys clicking, as we've talked about, Manny Pena was one of the few guys who seemed to be doing okay. I know no one expects a guy like him, or most catchers in general, to carry an offense. But with Omar Narvaez struggling, Manny Pena was one of the bright spots this season, and then he goes down. How damaging is it to lose a guy like that? Because on the one hand, he is a catcher. He's in a job share. He's not front and center. But I do think losing one of the few guys that's contributing really is a blow to this offense.
Well, I mean, you don't ever want to lose one of your two catchers. Manny's a very good defensive catcher too. He's the perfect backup catcher in the major leagues because he's a very solid defender, which you always want your backup catcher to do. But he'll also do some occasional things for you offensively. And good teammate, just a good mentor to a lot of players on the team. So he's the perfect guy backup. So that hurt to lose him. There's no question about it. This does give them a chance finally to take a better look at Jacob Nottingham. You know, he's been in their system for 4 or 5 years now. They got him when he was really young. He was not a good defender when they first got him. He's worked and worked and worked on his game. He's now made himself into a decent catcher. So we'll see if he can do some offensive things too. So this will at least finally give them a better idea, probably, of what they have in him. And they need to find that out because it'll determine some things they do at that position going forward.
Todd Rosiak wrote about some of the guys that have been up from, I guess, Campbellton is a term that we are using. I love it. I approve it. Campbellton being Camp Appleton, where the players who are not on the active roster have been trying to stay sharp. And there's been a lot of shuttling back and forth. And we talked about how there was such a logjam in the outfield before the season started. And now Jace Peterson is about the only constant in that outfield, with Kane out, Garcia injured, Braun injured. Jace Peterson's been all over the map at this point. He's one of those guys that's come up. Several pitchers have come up. Some pretty good stories. Phil Bickford and Justin Topa, although the results have been mixed in the early going, as you might expect for younger players or players who are making their major league debuts. I guess just what are some takeaways from these guys that are new, that Brewers fans are still getting to know? Anything really jump out about what you've seen so far?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what some of the young arms can do going forward. You know, Drew Rasmussen's already been up and been on the team, and he throws 98 miles an hour, so he has a great arm. Topa and Bickford both had a weird pass to the big leagues. Neither one looked like they were going to make it. Both of them threw the ball very well in Appleton and are getting their chances. Bickford, I think nerves got to him in his first outing. He hit some guys and I just think nerves got to him first time out. Topa threw the ball better than Bickford. So, but just going to be interesting to see where those, I don't know if we're going to have enough time left in this season to determine where they might fit going forward. But it's interesting that to have some guys move out of that alternate training site in Appleton that weren't necessarily at the start of the year considered in the group that would be players would be chosen from to play in the big leagues this year. So it's always interesting to see stuff like that happen. And we'll just see if they can put a foot in the door that'll help them be on the club next year.
One of the guys who's at Appleton right now is Corey Knebel. We haven't really talked about him, his struggles. He was placed on the disabled list. He's been optioned now back to Appleton to try to get right again. And I talked about with Todd just how difficult it is to try to come back from a major surgery and not be able to get into game action, not have a minor league rehab assignment available to you before you get onto a major league mound. I think that it definitely seems like that would play into some of the struggles we saw from Corey Knebel. But what do you think is next for him? That major league experience, or I should say minor league experience, is still not an option for him. The team, I don't know if the Brewers will go to him again this season until they see a lot of work in Appleton. I guess I don't know. What's next for him? Is this just going to be chalked up as maybe a lost season and you move on and hope he's back to good by 2021?
Well, I think we'll see him again in the big leagues unless he has some more physical issues. It was a hamstring that kind of ended up putting him on the injury list this year, but it was just he was a mechanical mess from just trying to push through that return from Tommy John in the big leagues. It's just a dumb year. It's a dumb year to make evaluations on almost anything, which is going to make the general manager's jobs really interesting this winter, because they're somehow going to have to figure out what any of this meant as they start preparing for 2021. But Corey Knebel did not have the normal path back from Tommy John surgery with a full spring training, and then you go on minor league rehab and get to pitch in real games. Everything's been different, and it's usually the second year back that you're yourself again. This was David Phelps' second year back from Tommy John, and look how he threw the ball, and he's a lot older than Corey too. The first year back, you just try to get some innings under your belt, sort of get your feet back under you, and then the next year is usually when you take back off again. So next, it was always going to be about next year for Corey, and this year's just been a screwed up year with the COVID, the long shutdown, no minor leagues, nothing's been the same. So he's had to do his rehab at the major league level, and that's never a fun thing to do. And he hasn't got his velocity back all the way yet. And so, they we'll see how many more outings they can get him this year. But it's all about 2021 for Corey right now, because this year was just too messed up timing-wise to make it the way he hoped it would be.
Probably also difficult to evaluate whether Ryan Braun would be back next season. I think going into the year, everyone sort of assumed this was the last year. He's talked about now maybe playing again because this year was so abbreviated. And I guess the fair thing to say is he probably won't be back with the Brewers on some sort of smaller deal. But, like you said, everything's so screwy. I honestly don't know if anyone could answer that question right now. Do you have any insight to that, or would you be just really surprised if he's back with the Brewers next season?
Well, let's wait and see what his appetite is for playing beyond this year, and if anybody, including the Brewers, is interested in giving him an opportunity. I mean, he's breaking down again, and this has been an ongoing issue with him for the last several seasons. Ever since his back surgery in 2015, his back has locked up on him from time to time, and that's what's going on with him now. He's 36 years old. He's got a thumb problem, a back problem, all these physical issues that have stopped him from being A, in the lineup, and B, productive when he is in the lineup. So, I mean, he may just decide, I'm not physically able to do this anymore, no matter how bad it is to go out on a COVID season, no matter how unsavory it is. He may just say, I just can't do this anymore. He also has a growing young family too, and he certainly has made lots of money, so that won't be an issue. And so I don't know what the appetite will be from either side, the Brewers or Braun, for even thinking about playing next year. He has mentioned that he didn't want to go out like this, but nobody wants to go out like this, And guess what? I'd say about 1% of athletes all time across all sports get to go out the way they want to go out.
Yeah, probably even less than that, to be honest. It's like a list you can come up with off the top of your head, like John Elway and a few others. But yeah, this is going to be interesting to see as it all develops. He's Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Brewers. JSOnline.com is where you can find all his material. You got lots of doubleheaders in your future, Tom. This is going to be a busy final month of the season. You all geared up for it?
Well, I mean, unless the Brewers completely fall apart before we get there, they've got 10 games remaining with the Cardinals to be played in 7 days. Over two in two separate cities. Why do I have the feeling that that's going to determine the future of both of those clubs?
It might. Yeah, I completely agree with you. They're right there neck and neck. Yeah, it's going to be, it's all, the whole season is going to come down to the last week end, maybe, like the last 2 days. It's just, there's just not enough room for guys to make, get separation. This is definitely going to come down to the last 2 or 3 days of the season, and the Cardinals are going to be very involved in what happens next for themselves and for the Brewers. You're absolutely right. Tom, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again next week.
Okay, thanks, JR.